I want to thank the guy on the screen there. That guy's name is Craig Groeschel, and he's done a wonderful job. You can bring the lights up over here on this side all the way, if you don't mind. Craig Groeschel has actually a church in Oklahoma, and we have an informal network relationship with him. And so he's a wonderful pastor there, and he pastors a small church of 30,000, I think, somewhere in that range, kind of in the Midwest where, you know, things like that happen, and he's done a wonderful job. But what he has done is he's offered a lot of these artwork resources for us at no cost. And so it's just wonderful to be able to partner with him. And this series also comes, he borrowed this series, How to Be Rich, from another great teacher named Andy Stanley, who's all the way on the East Coast. So I'm grateful to both of these teachers and mentors and how they work with us and help us in order to bless you all out there. And so we're in a great new series. And the thing we keep talking about here at New Life is this: how do we get love right? And that's a question that's always on my mind, because it's really Jesus' command. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. Pretty phenomenal thing. So how do we get love right? And then Jesus went on to say, you're going to basically have an intense love for one of two choices. You can either love God, or you're going to love, does anyone know the answer? You're going to love money. Yeah, and so it's interesting. I never hear feedback on anything else that I'm teaching too much on it. The only subject that I would ever get feedback on that feedback, John, you're teaching too much on how much God loves us. I've already heard that. You don't need to teach on that anymore. I've never heard anything, John, you're teaching too much on how to be less stressed in my life, okay? But the subject of money is the only one where people said, didn't he teach on that like 4 months ago? Okay, so that's kind of an interesting process. But when you look at the subject of getting love right, you can't ignore this one. And especially, as I've said, for 21st century followers of Jesus in America, it is the number one issue that we must look very carefully at if we are going to learn to love God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, and love our neighbor as ourselves. So we're going to look at this in a way that's going to be very helpful, I think, to all of us, because God cares about you, where you live right now. He ordained for you to be, that means he arranged for you to live where you're at. He helped guide you in the type of career you have. This is certainly not a subject that we're going to talk about. Shame on you if you have more than one car. You know, I remember as a kid, you know, when you have part of a plate of food, and what my mom would say, remember all of the starving children in China or something like that. Do you remember that? This is not to be that type of thing. However, we are going to put ourselves in context of where we're at in the global population. I don't know if you keep up with the news about the $380 million mega lottery that just kind of closed off. Did any of you have a fantasy at all when they interviewed one of those couples? And just kind of, I know my mind drifted for like a few seconds, thought, what would that have been like if that would have been Pam and I to win that amount? And then you fantasize, oh God, I would give you all this money, and if God, would you help me to win that? I would give you this and this and this and that. And you know, and you kind of fantasize all this stuff, because what you think is, wow, if I could win that, I would be rich, but it wouldn't change me, but I would be rich if I won the lottery. I would be rich, meaning I'm not rich now. I would be rich if I won the lottery. And so really, the question is, where's the line between being rich and not rich? And so we have a passage that I want us to look at together, and it's in your notes, and it comes from 1 Timothy 6, 17 through 19. And this is basically, the guy's name is Paul, and he was a great leader. He was a leader of leaders. His main ministry was to be developing other leaders. He's talking to a young leader early on in his ministry, 2,000 years ago, and their issues and things in their lives, very, very common to us now, except we now live in a civilization more than any other that is capitalistic, it's entrepreneurial, and is very, very much based on the most successful civilization ever of having explosive, affluent business growth. We've really built ourselves on that. So these type of passages become even more relevant for us. And so when Paul's writing this letter to this young leader, he's instructing him on how to work with the leaders in the area he's at. And I think it's very relevant for us. And he says this, very powerful first word here, especially in American culture. We don't get away with commanding anyone anything, because as Americans, we're a very individualistic society, and even if we're really polite, especially on the West Coast, we kind of have this smile, but inside you can be growling, but you go, that's cool, then you go away, and you're feeling something else. We don't want anyone to tell us anything what to do. Don't tell me what to do, type thing. And so, very powerful word where it says, command those who are what? What does it say here? Who are rich in this present world, not to be what? Not to be? I've never known any arrogant rich people. Have you? Okay. Okay, and we're laughing at that, but let's keep going. Nor to put their hope in, here's another one, their hope in wealth, which is so uncertain. No way. Okay. But to put their hope in God, who richly provides us with everything for our what? For our enjoyment. Command them to do good, to be rich in good deeds, and to be generous and willing to share. Not being cajoled, not being guilted into, but just be willing to share. In this way, it's an interesting phrase here because Jesus uses this very phrase also. In this way, they will lay up treasures for themselves as a firm foundation for the coming age so that they may take hold of the life that is truly life. Yeah, and that's different from the life we try to make and pull together with the resources that we have around us. We saw on video this whole idea of the Gallup poll and how being rich is kind of a perspective. The church was able to allow me to go and teach in Romania, a whole lot of business leaders and also pastor leaders, and the stuff we worked with was very relevant for both of those. A lot of the young entrepreneurs, a lot of large corporate leaders. But it was fascinating. I team-taught with a gentleman who's from Texas, who's an investor, and God has really, really blessed him, and he would be considered, in our culture, very, very fluent. But in the eyes of the Romanians, they looked at both of us as two peas in a pod. See, if I had this gentleman here, you would see a huge difference in what his affluence level is and what my affluent level is. And many of you would see me as just an average Joe, and this guy would be like, wow. But yet in the eyes of the Romanian audience looking at us, they kind of saw him as, yeah, making more than me, but both of us were kind of in this level that was way beyond them. I was in a church, and I was on the second row out in the audience, and I was going to be coming up to speak to the audience that day. And there was a note I wanted to remember, so I whipped out my phone, and it was a slider with a QWERTY board, and I was starting to type this little thing in really quick. And then I kind of looked up and down the row there, and there was a whole cluster of youth on the side, and everyone was staring at me on this smartphone. And it's like, you know, they do have some of that there. It's just not, you know, it's not completely backward. It's not considered like a fully developing country, but yet, For a pastor like this to have this, you know, state-of-the-art, latest model type phone, it was just really shocking. And I remember when I was there, maybe didn't plan right, I ran out of clean clothes, so I asked someone, you know, can you wash a couple of pair of pants for me and get them back to me tomorrow? And they kind of hesitated, and they said, okay, I'll do that. And then the next day, I got the pants back, but they were soaking wet. And that's when they explained to me, he says, John, no one has clothes dryers in Romania. Very few people. And then I started to think about it. Yeah, I saw, you know, they hang their clothes up to dry throughout the house. You know, and they lay towels and things on the ground, and they just drip dry everything. And this is considered, they're part of the European Union. This is considered one of the top crust countries of the world. And they do. They're not completely, you know, backwards on this. And so when I was there, it was really shocking to see that. And so the places, you know, some of the places I slept were people invited me to their home when I was out in some of the outskirt towns. And they have these Soviet block type buildings that are like 10 stories tall. And they're really old and really strong but rickety at the same time. They have elevators that are about this big. And they'll squeeze three people in there. So claustrophobia is something you get over or die. One of the two in Romania. Either that or you, many, many people just walk up, you know, 7, 8, 10 flights of stairs on a regular basis just to get to their flat. When you get in there, it's concrete walls. You know, you can't, I'm going to tear this wall up to just kind of open it up in here between the kitchen and the living room. That will never happen in these places. Two very small rooms, very coffin-sized restroom, little tiny kitchen, galley-type kitchen, and little tiny living room, and everyone has the exact cookie-cutter thing, and those are considered, you know, homeowners. And so I got to sleep in some of those places, and very gracious people, and I love them dearly. But when I drove home from the airport, and I drove up to our suburban home, built in 1984, and I drove into the driveway, I looked at our house, and it seemed like a castle. It just seemed amazing. And then a little bit later with this same organization called Equip, they invited me down to Pebble Beach for a leader's kind of banquet. And it's kind of a generic letter written by the president of the organization. John, you know, welcome. You know, we're so glad you're part of Equip. We're going to have several of the leaders across the United States come to Pebble Beach. And look, we're going to get you in on a discount. If you want to be a part of the whole weekend, we're going to go golfing. We're going to do all this other stuff. We are making available to you a discount price of $6,000 for the weekend to be a part of this. Or you can come just for the free dinner on Friday night. Guess which one I went to? And then when I went into the banquet room, there were people. I sat next to the guy that I taught with. We ran into each other. And, you know, the partner that I taught with in Romania. And he's worth about $150 million. And we sat there. But sitting two tables away was the guy that founded and owned Sonic. Have you ever heard of Sonic? You know, they have one in Vacaville. And so they're sitting there talking about pledges and handing out pledge cards. And the guy's up there saying, now, I know many of you have already talked to me about an initial pledge of $1 million toward what we need to do here. And it's a very, very worthy cause. And I'm looking at the options for pledges on there. And I had to make up my own that had less zeros. You know? And so you're looking at me, oh, John, you're just a regular Joe with all those, you know, wow, rich people and stuff. And then, you know, when I drove out, you know, I drove out. And when I went out to my Hyundai car, it was the only Hyundai in the parking lot, except for the work staff, you know. And I drove home in my car, and I drove up to my house. And, you know, my house just looked kind of old and small. You know, looked kind of old and small. And when we look at all of this, really there's just a lot about perspective on this. Is there not just a lot about perspective? So are you rich? You know, part of this thing, it is elusive, and especially in our hearts, it's elusive of what it means to be rich or not be rich. I remember a family just even in our area several years ago, the dad came up to me. He says, hey, John, he's really trying to work on his marriage and stuff, says, had one of the most incredible times of my whole life. I took the wife and our four kids and went out to McDonald's and we had a great time together and blah, blah, blah. He says, yeah, great, good for you. And then he kind of grabbed my arm and says, no, you got to understand, we've been married now for 8 years. This is the first time we've ever been out to eat together. See? And so some of you, and you're thinking, man, we're just squeezing by. But really, you think about it, you go out to eat, you do stuff like this, and then you're just thinking, well, of course, any average, normal, decent person. And then we start to get those emotional, you know, just kind of starting to get upset when we bring stuff up like this. And it's really not about that. Because really, I just have some good news and some bad news for you. And the good news is this. You're rich, okay? You know, we've talked about that. And so part of the strength of teaching is to be repetitive to where it trips off of your tongue. You've heard me say many times in this last year, this whole idea that if you're living in the United States, you really are rich. Now, we don't feel that. And we get stressed and we go, well, I don't want to hear this, and, you know, I don't live in those other countries, but according to our standards, but what does that have to do with the Bible? It has nothing to do with that. As we're looking at this, some of you have been given financial resources, or you've been given some abilities to get some wonderful financial resources, and that is wonderful. It's a blessing. It really, really is, and you shouldn't ever be ashamed of that. And some of you, through wisdom and through investments, are really going to become, in the standards of the United States, much more financially resourceful and where others would call you rich. Like in America here, that teaching partner would be considered rich, but I'd be considered an average Joe, okay? And you all related with me when I just went to the free dinner and you didn't golf for the weekend. But if I were to take my partner and take him over to Switzerland, and I forgot the name of the place, but there's a place where some of the great financial leaders of the world meet every year. But they fly in with their own custom-made 787 whatever, and they're multi-billionaires. And my teaching colleague, worth a mere $150 million, wouldn't even qualify to be there at that meeting. Do you see what I'm saying? But really what we're taking there is the minute percent and making it 0.0001 and even more and more of a fracture there. So what I'm telling you this is there is good news for us that we are rich, and many of you are going to become even much more affluent because God has blessed you that way. He's placed you in this country, and he will help you because he needs you. And he works through people. Look at this scripture here. Moreover, when God gives any person wealth and possession and enables him to enjoy them, to accept his lot, to be happy in his work, this is a gift of God. Because I don't know what your reaction's like, but my reaction, look, before we go any further, I just want to acknowledge this. I know there are people at New Life that have lost your jobs, you've been unemployed, or, you know, the bottom's kind of fallen out, and you're just barely hanging on in context of just making ends meet within our culture and within our economy. Some of you, I know, have experienced horrible divorces, and many times, especially for women, they've done studies, you lose three times the income that you had before. And immediately you're trying to, you know, do welfare stuff like that, and the finances are just blown. Others have had medical problems, and there have been issues there with that, and it can just, we understand, look, we understand all these things. And so I even saw a study recently that the average retiree is going to have to shell out $250,000 in medical expenses over the rest of their lifetime that will not be covered by any kind of insurance. And so I do understand things like that. But in our lives, compared to the rest of the world, it's just absolutely amazing the amount of affluence and wealth that we have. You know, just let's put in context a friend of mine from Nigeria that lives out in a little town called Akure. It's just a little town. This is the type of population. They call it, it's just a little village 4 hours out of Lagos that has maybe 400,000 people in it. One out of every five Africans in the whole continent of Africa live in the little country of Nigeria. It's just gigantically packed. with people. And let's say a Nigerian is talking to a friend of his about what he knows about America. And he says, you know, most Americans own a car. And if you own a car in the world today, you can write this down somewhere. You are within the 3% of all people in the world if you own a car. On all of our campuses, do any of you own a car? Would you raise your hand? Okay. Only one-third of the people in this room own a car. So, no, just kidding. We all drove here. Most of you didn't take transit. You know, so you know, you can look to the person next to you and say, congratulations, you're part of the 3%. Ready? Congratulations, you are part of the 3%. Now, what if you own more than one car? It says, and there are many people that own more than one car, and they have little motorbikes and stuff like this. And they even have a house. They even have a house for their cars, and it's called a garage. And some have a house that fits more than one car. They must have babies. And some, because some have a house that'll fit three cars, one for the one car, for the other car, and then for all the other junk that they have. And then then describing says, and they have gardens out front. If you're British and whatever, we call them lawns or yards, but they call that a garden. And they say, and in a place that I know in America, they have these little magic fountains that pop up out of the ground all by themselves. And they spray water all around, and children can run through that, and you can walk up to the sprinkler and open your mouth, and you will be drinking pure water that you can drink. And it just pops out of the ground, and they grow this for plants that they never harvest and eat. It's just something to look at. And some people have something like that in the front of their house, and some have it also in the back of their house, too. They have something like this. And so they go on, and they could describe all these things about kitchens. They have places where you can put frozen food, you can put cold food, and then they have something that will heat the food up really, really fast. And they have all these kitchens, but what they do instead is they go out and they argue where they're going to go out to eat that night. That's what, this is the American way. And they have closets for clothes. And sometimes they have closets just for a woman and a closet just for a man. And sometimes the closets are so big you can walk in. And they have a whole closet there where we sleep eight children. They have a closet. And then they look in their closet before they go somewhere and they go, I don't have anything to wear. So there's this whole mindset that we have. And everyone is so rich that almost everyone there is on the internet. They don't have to save up their money and go to an internet cafe and go on the internet 1 hour a week. They can, even the poorest of the poor think they poor can be on the internet almost every day. And so most of us don't feel rich, but we many of us are incredibly rich. So on average, this is kind of just an estimate because I didn't do an actual real study on this, but I'm pretty sure I'm pretty dead on with this, that on average, most working age new lifers make over $40,000 a year here, whether it's individual or, double income or whatever. And if we were to go double income, many would go way, way over that. If you do make it that range, you're within the 4% of the whole world population. If you make $45,000 a year, you are within the 1% of all of the world. You know, if I had two $1 bills and I were just to wad these up and kind of toss them down here, you would kind of go, well, that's kind of weird. But no one would be scrambling out of your chairs to go and pick this up right away. And don't, oh, I would, ha ha, okay. You wouldn't, okay? And they'd kind of sit there. Now, if there were maybe $100 bills, one of you might go, what's that all about? But the truth is this. If I were to just wad up a couple of dollars, throw them on the ground, you'd go, ha, oh, well, no big deal. But yet, for almost half the population of the world, that is a day's wages. Now, try to calculate your day's wage. Really, try to just calculate that. And if someone were to just kind of say, and throw that on the ground right here and say, first person up here at the stage gets to keep this. Some of you would sit there, some of you would be real innovative and go, I'm going to go for that. And so a lot of this is just perspective. So fill in a blank here. If you're going to be rich, if you're going to be good at being rich, the first thing we have to do is admit that we're rich. Admit that we're rich. So I know it feels odd, doesn't it? And some of you are coming in, you're feeling pretty good, now you're feeling kind of bad, you know, and it's not about that. You know, just admit that you're rich. We are, and don't feel guilty about it. Don't. God has ordained and placed you on this place in the world. He's done that. But this is what happens. We get really kind of mopey and really self-pity in what we have and how we have to downsize, and you know, and this is not to diminish, you know, the stress that you have going on in your life. It's none of those things. It's really, really not. It's just to help give you perspective in the middle of these things. Now, I'll give you an example. If someone were to give you a compliment, let's say you have kids, someone said, you know, you have beautiful kids. You know, you would go, well, thank you very much, would you not? You wouldn't say, you know, we've had to work really hard. They haven't always been beautiful. You know, we have to work on them every day, you know. And, you know, it's just, we do this. Yeah. But if someone were to say and compliment you, let's say, because I know this is one of the things I did. Wow, you got a beautiful new car. You know, I remember the first thing out of my mouth, well, we got it less than dealer cost, you know, and da-da-da-da-da, you know, it was really cheap price, you know. And why do we do that if God has blessed us with resources? And if we've been responsible and things like this, why do we do that? Well, wow, that's a nice home you have. Well, I know, you just fell into it, and it was at an auction, and da-da-da-da. No. But that's kind of how we are in all this. You know, and it doesn't mean that you don't try to be frugal. You know, we had a JVC 26-inch color television we bought brand new in 1992. The thing just went on the blitz recently. Can you believe that? And so we're looking at all these flat-screen TVs, and we're looking at the context of the Capital campaign and everything, and we were at a thrift store, and there was a Panasonic 26-inch TV that, because we're going to have to get a whole new entertainment center because we couldn't find a 26-inch box. This is a 26-inch color TV, upgraded. I think it was a 1995, and it still worked nice color. We just slipped that thing in here recently for $30, and I watched the NFL playoff yesterday, and it was good. You know? And so, you know, it's just like, you know, I'm not saying, you know, be frugal or whatever, but if you got a new flat screen TV, I'm not saying, oh, I better not tell John I got a TV. You see, that's what I'm talking about. You know, God blesses us with things, and if blessings come your way, the things of God, don't feel guilty. Be grateful. Understand this. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. Okay? Those are blanks to fill in. In fact, let's say that together, that phrase. Ready? God has blessed me with more than I need. I'm rich. And then turn to the person next to you and say, and so are you. Okay, ready? All right. So here's the bad news. Here's the bad news. The bad news is you're rich. That's the bad news. Why is that bad news? Look, this is what Jesus said. And it wasn't metaphorical. It was just the whole idea is it's impossible. You know how small the eye of a needle is, trying to put a thread through the eye of a needle. People understood that in the time of Jesus. He said, how hard is it for the rich to enter the kingdom of God? I'm going to rephrase that now. How hard is it for you and me to enter into the kingdom of God? Indeed, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man or woman, or I'm going to rephrase that, than it is for us to enter into the kingdom of God. Here's the problems. It's harder for you to depend on God. It just is. I mean, when Jesus has that prayer, give us today our daily bread, most of us have never really had to worry about that. I mean, if we were to go to your apartment, your home, whatever, there's going to be a pantry, you're going to have shelves in your kitchen or whatever, you're going to have cans in there, you're going to have boxes of macaroni and cheese or whatever, you're going to have milk in your refrigerator, some of you are going to have stainless steel refrigerators, you know, with granite marble top and whatever. There's nothing wrong with all of that. Again, that's what I'm saying. But really, the whole idea comes in. Some are doing well with your investments or your insurances to where even your kids aren't going to really have to worry about this. And so really, it's just harder for us to really depend on God in all of these things. It's hard. And so keeping that fervency that this is a gift of God, that he has given this to us, it distracts you from true priorities also then. It distracts you from true priorities. We have all kinds of options. I mean, we could go to all kinds of places. We can sign up our kids for all kinds of things. And it could just take all of our time. And I know some people, when certain seasons come, we hardly ever see them. They're out with their kids everywhere doing all these things. All this stuff is fine in itself, but I tell you what, it can distract us from those things that are critically, critically important. And because we have all these other needs met. I mean, if this is the role of many ladies around the world, if you don't have to spend 4 hours a day walking to a place to get pure water and put it in an old, used plastic bucket, then carrying that water back to your home so you have a water supply every day, that's 4 hours of your day, you have a lot more discretionary time to do things. Look, we have degrees of poverty here. I don't know if any of you have ever visited, and it's just the history legacy of the United States. There are some places, I guess the term we use is Native American places, and I don't know if you've ever visited some of these places, just the dire poverty that are in some of these places is so wrong. It's just so wrong right here in the United States of America, and it makes your heart grieve. But it distracts us, and then you have a greater responsibility. You have a greater responsibility. Because what we do in America is we think I'm self-made. When really, where you're at is so much because of where you were born. So much of it is that. And sure, you've capitalized on opportunities that you've been able to have. This is called the land of opportunity for now. But the reality is, we're all bankrupt spiritually. And the question we need to ask, why has God blessed you so much? Why did God place you in this place where you are part of the 1% in so many ways? And yet, we go home and throughout the week, and we have a hard time paying our bills, and God knows about those stresses, God knows about those things. When really, 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 there are ways that we can make things even much more frugal than you realize. But we look around us and we see the comparison and we do all this stuff about what life should be like because there's this unrecognized entitlement level that we have. When really God is looking at followers of Jesus and he's saying, look, you guys, remember the other half of the world and where they live at on a daily basis. And when we're comparing what we see the images on television. You have even noticed like family comedies. I've noticed like movie family comedies and the house that they live in and all this stuff. And they're supposed to be like the typical family in America. And I'm going, really? You know, I'm just looking at this gigantic house and brand new cars everywhere. And they're just portraying the average Joe. And a lot of the people in the audience are going, wow, I kind of live in a, you know, 3-bedroom, 1-floor kind of ranch house, and I thought I was average. That's the average? Where does that place me? And we have these comparison things going on. So some of you are going, you know, this is the deal, you know. How many of you did not really feel rich like 30 minutes ago before we talked about this? But now you say, okay, now after this talk, I feel rich now. Would you raise your hand? Okay. How many of you were confused by the question I just asked? Would you raise your hand? Okay, thank you very much. Okay, all right. You know, we want to be rich in ways that honors God. That's what I'm saying here today. I'm not here to kick any of us around. There's no guilt in being rich. But there could be a curse of being rich if you don't trust God. And so there are things that he wants us to do. So I just want to close with a word of prayer with you all on this. And campuses, you can go and have a word of prayer.